First Person Advisors is now a subsidiary of NFP, the fifth largest insurance broker in the world, combining local expertise with access to global capabilities and solutions. Learn more at firstpersonadvisors.com.
Hawaii, paradise, a bucket list vacation for many. And it was there where the business of travel really took off for the man who is a key driver in promoting Indianapolis's $5.4 billion tourism industry.
400,000 people have come through the walls of the convention center safely in a meaningful way. Indianapolis is winning in tourism, in the tourism arena. We've figured out a way to work with city government, state government. We've found a way to stay healthier than other major cities. Now, we're not immune from bumps and bruises, and we've seen those from the summer, last summer, all the way to present day. Yet, again, when you're talking to other cities across the nation, big cities, saying, how are you able to continue to host these events and conventions? How is your hotel occupancy staying so healthy? How are you opening new hotels? How are you bracing for events like the college football national playoff coming to Indianapolis? Those are all anomalies. Those are all big bright spots on the horizon. And in the tourism arena, again, we're setting the pace.
That's the eternal optimist, Chris Gaul, on tourism rebounding in Indianapolis after a devastating 2020. He's a Hoosier at heart, a product of Pike High School, a Butler University grad who spent more than 15 years pumping up Indianapolis as a hidden gem for tourists to visit and conventions to set up shop. Thanks to Chris, Indy no longer much of a hidden gem. Get to know, visit Indy Senior Vice President Chris Gaul on this edition of the Business and Beyond podcast. Hello and welcome to the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. I'm Gary Dick. Chris Gaul got his start in the tourism industry in Hawaii, where he was part owner of a marketing agency promoting the big business of travel there. He spent a lot of time in the Aloha State. Mom had family there, and Chris made many visits as a kid, even developed a passion for surfing and scuba diving. But life has presented many challenges for Chris. He lost his dad at the age of 8, Tom Gaul, the first and only federal probation officer to be killed in the line of duty. In 2018, Chris was diagnosed with testicular cancer and is being treated by world-renowned IU oncologist Dr. Larry Einhorn. But through it all, Chris has remained steadfast and optimistic and a true leader in efforts to keep Indianapolis a destination of choice for some of the world's biggest events. Married for 20 years to his wife, Catherine, the father of two boys, and a man who proudly counts Peyton Manning and David Letterman among his biggest celebrity interviews. I'm pleased to be welcomed on this edition of the Business and Beyond podcast by Visit Indy's Chris Gaul. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing great, Gary. Thank you so much for having me on. What a delight.
Oh, yeah, it's great to always great to be with you. You know, this year, I don't have to tell you, it's been incredibly difficult for so many people, so many industries, no one untouched. But I think you could make the argument that the hospitality sector, the convention business, perhaps impacted more than anyone else. Can you, as someone who, and you truly are on the inside of that scenario, can you give us some perspective on how difficult? I know we're recovering, but there are some people who simply aren't going to recover.
Yeah, you're right, Gary. Globally, tourism came to a screeching halt. If you think about the pandemic, people gathering, people traveling in large groups, that just wasn't happening, and rightfully so. And we took an enormous hit as a community, including tourism. And yet, the resiliency has helped us stay ahead. And as we sit today, as I come to you from inside the Indiana Convention Center, we are more healthy than other major cities. And other major cities call us daily to say, hey, listen, how in the world have you held 120 events since the pandemic? How did you host March Madness in its entirety? We'll never get tired talking about that. How in the world are you having trade shows and the college football playoff is continuing and planning? And so there's a sense of pride in that. Yet we know there's incredible pain because some businesses will never reopen who counted on tourism as their bread and butter.
Yeah, you and you've made the point, Chris, that you believe Indianapolis is ahead of most cities, maybe any city in the country in terms of coming back when it comes to the convention business, when it comes to that very important industry. Folks are catching up to be sure, but you think Indy is ahead of the curve.
Yeah, we look heads and beds, right? So people travel, they check into hotels. It's a major metric nationwide and globally. And so right now, we're a couple percentage points higher than other major cities in terms of hotel occupancy. And that's our lead indicator. That tells us that people are visiting Indianapolis each day. They're convening in Indianapolis each day. And that gives us confidence. And then you look in the short term and long term, we're getting pretty crowded again on the convention calendar. When we look at the fourth quarter of 2021 in particular, and then 2022 looks very healthy. And we compare that with other major cities and kind of stack up. And again, we're ahead of that pace. And we feel like we'll have that edge going into 2022. And then other cities are going to get federal funds like we have, and people start competing again. But for now, we are an anomaly still in the tourism arena.
You know, a big part of that recovery equation, if you will be downtown Indianapolis coming back, businesses coming back, people coming back. You know, I don't have to tell you, there's a lot of concern out there about the future of downtown and how quickly things can come back. I'm one of them. I'm concerned about how that happens. I know there are a lot of people, really smart people, trying to get their arms around that. Give us some insight, Chris, as you look at the future of downtown, of bringing that vibrancy back. It doesn't happen overnight, I know, but your thoughts on that and some of the efforts, what folks are doing to say, hey, we've got to get downtown Indy back to being that model for the rest of the country.
Yeah, perception is reality. And so a lot of your listeners are thinking, you know what, I used to come and commute downtown and I'm working from home still, or my business has said, hey, I can work remotely. You know, certainly Salesforce is the elephant in the room and how they're bringing workforce in and out of downtown Indianapolis. Lilly's decision to bring folks back was a huge win. Any given day, Gary, pre-pandemic, there are about 200,000 people in our downtown Miles Square. You've got about 40,000 residents. You've got about 80,000 visitors. The balance are our workforce, people coming and going. And so those three equations have changed in all facets. And so not a day goes by that we don't worry about the downtown or think about the downtown or program the downtown or invite folks to visit the downtown and to encourage residents to do the same. And until the workforce bounces back or we see how things shake back and shake out on how people work in space downtown, literally office buildings, I don't think we'll have a real feel on how many people we've lost day in and day out. But the other big focus, and it's being led by the chamber, it's being led by the city, is Circle Center. You've got a big opportunity there to rethink and reimagine that. That's actually exciting. I think most people go, oh, what are we going to do? Well, it's me. No, actually, what are we going to do in a positive way? That's a huge opportunity the chamber and Develop Indy are leading. GM Stamping Plant. Massive opportunity. Other cities would crave to be able to paint on that canvas of 100 acres. So we also have things to look forward to.
Yeah. You bring up two really good points. I mean, to me, the GM Stamping Plant, Elanco, and that project truly transformational. I know that's a phrase that's overused sometimes these days, but I think it's transformational. Takes it downtown to the west side of White River and has some positives. And again, everyone wonders about, you know, talking about Circle Center, what's next. Any insights you can provide? Any things, ideas being kicked around at this point?
Well, absolutely. And candidly, there have been a lot of discussions over the last 5 or 6 years in particular, and real candid discussions. And where it sits now, being led by Develop Indy and the chamber and the mayor's office, there are real opportunities. There's a real sense of urgency. There's a real master plan being put into place, methodically looking at each and every square foot and not looking back, looking forward. What's the role of an urban mall? And wow, all the components of this physical infrastructure connected to hotels, within steps of restaurants, within steps of major sporting events. Is it residential? Is it mixed use? Is it academic? Is it a food hall? Are there major tenants that should have a bullseye on Circle Center Mall? I mean, those have all been discussed. And in between that, the pandemic happened. So we all view this as an opportunity, not something we're being pulled down and have to worry about. It's opportunistic.
Yeah. You talk about development and new projects. There's hotel development going on downtown. The new boutique hotel, the Hotel Indy, which is it looks like a pretty cool development. Obviously, Bottle Works Hotel there. So that development would seem to me to indicate that there's still some people pretty bullish on downtown in the future.
Absolutely. You talked earlier about kind of Indy winning. Condé Nast Traveler canvassed the globe. They picked 21 destinations you got to visit in 2021, Indianapolis. Travel and Leisure canvassed the globe. 21 places in the world you've got to visit, Indianapolis. Just this week, Time Magazine, places to go and check out and live and work, Indianapolis. So that's a product of that bullishness. The fact that Bottle Works opened during a pandemic caught the attention of other hotel developers who said, wow, what's going on? News that universally, in a very bipartisan way, a unanimous vote, 25-0, to expand the convention center during a pandemic caught the attention of other developers, commercial, residential, in particular, said, wow, how is Indianapolis moving forward with hotel development, convention center development during a pandemic? And so those are bright spots that have cast a light, kept us relevant, and kept other developers kicking the tires, like Hotel Indy, which will open this fall with 90 keys in the edge of kind of the east side of Washington Street there, within a stone's throw of Bankers Life Fieldhouse. We're getting calls by meeting planners. How are you opening another hotel? When is it open? That keeps attention on Indy. It keeps the pressure on us, but it also gives us that opportunity and that edge.
You are obviously very passionate about Indianapolis, I think probably in large part because this is home for you, where you grew up. You went to Pike High School, played for the Red Devils, Hall of Fame coach, the legendary Ed Siegel. Now, what were you, Chris? Were you a point guard, two guard? Give me your stats.
I was an off guard. And I like to pass the ball more than shoot.
That's now, I find that hard to believe. Come on, don't kid me now.
And I am very proud to be a Pike High School Red Devil. I grew up at 38th and Kessler, right on the edge of Washington Township and Pike Township. I first really fell in love with the game of basketball during my years growing up. Coach Ed Siegel, who just passed away, by the way, within the last year, was really a mentor. He was someone who took me under his wing early and taught me about life and how you earn someone's respect. It's not given. And Pike continues to be one of the more diverse high schools in the state. And so I valued that growing up, really, the fact that I have friends who don't look like me. And that was a big part of my high school experience and continues to be, where I kind of have that passion about equity, because I saw a lot of people that didn't look like me and were friends with a lot of people that didn't look like me. And that was on the court, off the court. I still love playing basketball. You know, I play two or three times a week in pickup games. I like to shoot baskets. I really do.
You know, you mentioned Coach Siegel, the impact he had on your life. I think that's something these days that sometimes gets lost in the impact of sports. It's not just about the wins and losses, the points, the stats, but the impact, especially at the high school level, that coaches have on young people, I think is enormous.
I was just thinking today, I dropped my son, Kanoa. He'll be a freshman. I dropped him at soccer tryouts, and I saw these coaches, and I know they will, if he makes it, inevitably help shape him into a man, a human. So they play a big role, and I was fortunate to have Coach Siegel, who really put people first. He cared genuinely about the person and what you were doing outside of the court. He was viciously competitive as well. And we lived in the same neighborhood. He would often give me rides to and from practice. And those are the moments I'll treasure, where he would give me points of wisdom. Coincidentally, although a few years apart, Governor Eric Holcomb played for Coach Siegel.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
Inevitably, when I see the governor, we'll gravitate towards stories about Coach Ed Siegel and the impact he had on us. It's real. And he was such a unique person who shaped me into the man I am today, literally.
Yeah. You went on to Butler University. You're on the board of trustees at Butler now as well. That's obviously another place you're very passionate about. As you look at Butler and the role it plays in the fabric, if you will, of Indianapolis, Your thoughts, your memories, any favorite memory as you look back on your time at Butler as a student?
Yeah, it's the only university I applied to. I'm fortunate to get in, to have gotten in. I wanted to stay close to home. As you mentioned, I lost my dad when I was 8. So I wanted to stay within a stone's throw. It was a 5-minute drive from where my mom and brother were still living at the time. And so it was very natural to attend Butler. And I grew up, in addition to visiting Hawaii and seeing family and friends in Hawaii, I grew up around Butler's campus a lot. We'd go see performances at Clues and basketball games and football games. So it was kind of part of my youth. We have friends on the edge of Butler Tarkington, so it felt real comfortable. And as a student, within 30 days of hitting campus, my eyes were quickly turned to now my wife, Catherine. And we fell in love, period. And so, as you mentioned, 20 years of marriage. And so I can't help but thinking Butler equals my wife, Catherine. And, you know, we're raising these two little bulldogs turning into young bulldogs. And so everything, you know, God, family, friends, Butler has helped shape me. And Butler's a lot like Indianapolis. It's often seen as an underdog that punches above its proverbial weight class. Butler is most known for basketball, as Indy's most known for auto racing. Yes, yet it's replete with arts and culture and professors doing really progressive, innovative offerings in the classroom. So I feel fortunate that Indy and Butler are two kind of institutions that I get a chance and opportunity to represent on a daily basis, because I'm passionate about both, and both are very similar.
That is that's really neat. So it truly was with Catherine love at first sight, it sounds like.
It was August. We had moved in. We talked. I had the courage to ask her for her phone number. I called her the next day, and we started dating. And the rest is history. We have enjoyed this December 20 years, and she is my litmus test. She is my my love, my best friend, and someone who always gives me blind spots. She's always someone who's challenging me on the work-life balance. Is that meeting critically important, or should you be at home? Is that business trip something someone else could go on so that you don't miss that soccer game? And for that, I'm very thankful that she grounds me and she gives me the blind spots and the advice that no other person is really uniquely positioned to help me with.
That's neat. So you graduate from Butler. So Butler, Indianapolis, obviously passions, but there's another spot on the globe, Hawaii, that has a special place in your heart as well. You actually moved to Hawaii, right, and became a partner in a marketing agency promoting tourism. So Hawaii was really, I guess, where you got your start in tourism.
It is. So as a kid, my mom used to live there. She used to work there. We have family friends there. And so as a kid, I learned about Hawaii. I visited Hawaii. It's instinctually part of my calendar each year to visit the islands. And that was the case growing up. And so I graduated from Butler with a communications degree. After an internship at RTV Channel 6 in the newsroom, I'm passionate about broadcast journalism and marketing. I land a job here at a local marketing agency. And I'm kind of thinking, well, I didn't study abroad and Hawaii is important to me. And the phone rings and I kind of scurry out of the current work environment I am in here in Indy. And they say, hey, we got your name. We know you have Hawaii ties. And would you be interested in this job? And I said, absolutely. And they said, would you fly out for the interview? So under the cover of night as kind of a new graduate, I fly out with Catherine, then my fiance, and interview. I'm offered the job. I come back, pack up, and relocate to Hawaii. And growing up, I was always fascinated with this idea that I felt like I was a visitor, yet had family and friends, so it felt more like home. And I had a whole set of family and friends there and felt comfortable there, so it didn't feel like I was a visitor, yet technically I kind of was. It'd be for a week or two. And then when I worked there, 85% plus of their economy is dependent on tourism. And so our agency helped Hawaii Tourism drive tourism. And it's fascinating to see how many people aspire to visit Hawaii, yet, you know, Hawaii competes with Samoa, Tahiti, Fiji, Australia. So people think, well, it's easy. You sell Hawaii, you promote market Hawaii. Well, if you're going to go to Hawaii, you're also thinking about other exotic destinations. And so It's there where I learned about crisis communications in the realm of tourism when September 11th happened. Planes were coming in and out of Hawaii, and so tourism came to a screeching halt. When SARS happened, Japanese tourism as a whole makes up nearly half of the people who visit the Hawaiian Islands. That was a crisis we had to work through. And so I used and leveraged and thought about some of that crisis communication in Hawaii tourism when Indianapolis tourism was facing the Religious Freedom Restoration Act in 2015 through the pandemic currently. How do you stay relevant and how do you stay in a marketing lane while people aren't traveling? And so there have been some parallels between the two, and there have been a lot of dissimilarities. Warm weather, tropical, exotic, convention, business, underdog. And so it's been fun. But ultimately, Gary, I love trying to influence why and how someone travels to a destination, in this case, Indianapolis, what they take, what they leave behind, and how they then become your advocate, so that they talk in favorable terms about your destination, in this case, Indy.
Very good. Yeah, I know that Hawaiian connection. You and Catherine visit there, the family, frequently. And your sons both have Hawaiian names, right?
Yeah, Kanoa and Kai. And so Kanoa is biblical for Noah. It's also the free one. And he has a free spirit. And he's our freshman. And then Kai translates into ocean. And I'll tell you what, Gary, he loves the ocean. Both boys do. They love surfing. They love snorkeling. They're getting trained in scuba diving. Anytime we're around the ocean, they're at peace, as am I. It's so healing. And so we visit nearly annually to see family and friends, to make sure that we understand and teach and instill in them the importance of the Hawaiian culture. So while we're not Polynesian by DNA, we're Polynesian by love and affection for this culture that is so warm and full of hospitality and so welcoming, kind of the key tenets of being a Hoosier. And so we love visiting and seeing friends and family and instilling in them these Hawaiian values, while also coming back home to Indy where we have family and friends as well.
A great connection. We're going to talk more about your career, Chris, here in Indianapolis and some of the challenges that you face professionally and personally as well. But first, Chris, each week we do a 2-minute drill on the Business and Beyond podcast. So if you're game, I'll fire a few questions your way.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, good. What's your favorite way to relax?
At home, not leaving the friendly confines, if you will, surrounded by Catherine and the boys. We have a nice outdoor space around back that overlooks our backyard with a creek running through it. And just to be around them without phones and talking is without question how I want to relax.
Very good. How about your favorite snack?
My favorite snack, dry almonds and or peanut butter filled pretzels. I'll eat both of those by the handfuls during the course of a day.
Good. How about your biggest pet peeve?
When people say the word fine, they'll say, hey, you know, Chris, how was that presentation? Oh, it was fine. Hey, Gary, you know what? You barbecued those steaks. How do you think they tasted? Well, they were fine. You know what? What that really means is that wasn't good enough. And so that's a pet peeve when people use the word fine or they use the word but. You know, hey, Gary, you're doing a great job on this podcast, but you know, that's an eraser for whatever you said. Hey, Chris, you're a great guy and you're talented and trustworthy, but it's an eraser. Those are two pet peeves because words matter.
How about your favorite genre of music? Favorite music and maybe a favorite musical artist?
Hawaiian reggae and reggae as a whole. And, you know, you've got the classic kind of reggae artists. Jimmy Cliff in particular is a time-tested reggae artist that I love, and I just love his music.
Did you have a favorite TV show as a kid?
I'd say The Wonder Years. I grew up as a kid, you know, you'd watch The Wonder Years and you kind of saw this family operate. And although it was somewhat similar to mine, it was also dissimilar. And so there was some aspiration there and some comfort there and some life lessons learned. And so I've rewatched that with the boys on the couch to learn as well.
Very good. Okay, you're a hoopster, so you would have an opinion on this. Single class or class basketball?
I'm a Bobby Plump fan. I'm a Butler fan. I'm an Underdog fan. Let them all in at the same time and see who wins. So let's not have those class basketball games anymore. Let's go back to our roots here in Indiana.
You have the opportunity to do interviews in your job at Visit Indy Events and another venues and scenarios. So you've interviewed a lot of cool people. Do you have a favorite interview, one or two favorite people you've interviewed over time?
Yeah, so part of the role as a spokesperson, as a city promoter and booster, is having those who have ties here talk favorably about Indianapolis and get them re-engaged. And so Letterman in particular, Dave Letterman, had kind of put us at distance for years. He was tepid in advocating for Indianapolis. We had him back, and I had a chance to interview him at the Madam Walker Legacy Center for part of the bicentennial celebration and pre-pandemic. And it was just so fun to hear his unvarnished outlook on Indianapolis and what he remembers from Naptown through present day. And how, by the way, his son Harry, he instills Indianapolis into his son Harry. And I think that's the undertold story, is the importance of Indianapolis in Letterman's life now through now his 17 or 18-year-old son.
Final question for you. I know you have several, but could you identify one or two, you know, non-family mentors, most important mentors who've really impacted your life?
Leonard Hoops is our CEO. He gives me a lot of autonomy and respect and responsibility. Judy Thomas works for the city of Indianapolis, my former colleague. We talk about equity and she teaches me daily. I also really seek mentorship from Brian Payne, who runs Central Indiana Community Foundation. And Judge Sarah Evans Barker has been a family friend, kind of like my second mom growing up. And she has instilled in me and taught me on the personal side of values and trust and respect. And she has just been this constant, loving, caring, supporting person that I cannot believe how fortunate I am to have her in my life.
Very good. We've passed the two-minute drill with flying colors, Chris. Thanks for that. When we return, we're going to have a lot more with Visit Indy Senior Vice President Chris Gall, including how he deals with challenges, adversity in his job, his life. Stay with us.
First Person Advisors is now a subsidiary of National Financial Partners, the fifth largest insurance broker and consultant in the world. Develop your total reward strategies all in one place with the combination of First Person's local expertise and NFP's global resources and integrated solutions. Learn more at firstpersonadvisors.com.
Welcome back to the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. My guest this week is Visit Indy's Chris Gall. And Chris, you know, we were talking the first half of the podcast about some of the challenges and opportunities downtown. Do you think, in your view, I think a lot about this because, you know, Indianapolis is so important, not only for this region, but for the entire state. Do you think the city in some ways is at a turning point coming out of the pandemic? So much, you know, attention on downtown. We've got some massive events coming up, the College Football National Championship game, the NBA All-Star game, many other events coming up. As you look at what's in front of Indianapolis, so these this next year or two or three, a turning point, do you think?
Turning point and critical. As there's not a city in the nation whose urban core is not being worried about, discussed, and planned. And so how we rebound, continue to rebound is in large part dependent on how we care for and continue to care for the downtown. No matter how many more people come back to the workforce, how many visitors come back, and when, we have to make sure that kind of our unique selling point, the unique proposition that puts India ahead of other major cities, is the downtown. It's the Mile Square. It's our mountain. It's our ocean. It's our biggest attractant as a whole. And so some of those storefronts being refilled is important. Having confidence by our residents that it is still the safest neighborhood in all of Marion County, and that we need to support those businesses and those entities that still have confidence in coming downtown every day. And so that is critically important. As we talked about, there's also a lot of opportunity with the Convention Center expansion and Pan Am project, with the Pacers and Bankers Life Fieldhouse investing $360 million to make it anew. New hotels, Circle Center Mall being debated in a good way. I think Indianapolis will turn very quickly in the next two or three years and come out in a progressive way that other downtowns and other cities haven't and can't see, because we have some canvases to paint on, namely GM Stamping in Elanco and then Circle Center Mall in particular. So we will turn, you know, 200 years of Indianapolis turning the page, pandemic turning the page, and right before us, as you mentioned, even today, we're in meetings with the College Football Playoff National Championship National team based in Dallas. they're full steam ahead. We're going to have 1,000 media, 100,000 visitors in our city in about 100 days. That's part of that recovery that no other city can tell.
In terms of personal turning points, you've had a number over the course of your still young life. Very early in life, as we mentioned earlier, at the age of 8, you lost your dad, a federal probation officer, who was killed in the line of duty. What do you remember about that, and how has that impacted your life?
So everyone fights adversity. And in my case, I was 8, my brother 4. My parents had been married for 12 years. My dad was a U.S. Marine. He got his master's from Indiana State in sociology. He cared about the wellness of others. And so he went into the probation industry, and he was a federal probation officer. So he would have office downtown here at the federal probation office within the federal building. And he was there to help, not hurt individuals. And so in September of 1986, I said goodbye, and he went to the Fountain Square neighborhood to call on someone he had only met once, someone who had been convicted for everything but murder and suspected in murder, someone who had just got out of federal prison. And my dad was there to help him rehabilitate, a gentleman by the name of Michael Wayne Jackson. And he was not mentally stable, and he was not getting the help he needed. And so he murdered my dad very blatantly, and he went on to murder 2 other people. And he eluded the FBI for more than 2 weeks and finally took his own life in rural Missouri. And so as a kid, I vividly remember attending Guyon Creek Elementary School in Pike Township and getting called from the playground by my teacher that I needed to go to the office, which was unusual for me because I was not in trouble. And I remember thinking something was not right. And when I hit the office, there stood my mom and our pastor. And my mom said, "Your dad went to heaven today." And I remember clenching my fists and thinking very quickly, what did that mean? And my little 8-year-old brain trying to process this. And so that has changed me in every way, from faith to family, from the importance of what's important, what's not. It's also scared me a lot. It's shaped me in ways probably I still don't realize. And so we went on, the 3 of us, my mom, my brother, and I. My mom's never remarried. She's still married in her heart. And not a day goes by I don't think about my dad and what he would do. And in large part, as a dad, I didn't have a dad growing up. I had a lot of people who played the dad figure and uncles and my grandfather and family friends. Yet I still kind of question, is this what my dad would do? Is this how I should handle being a dad? But to lose someone so violently is hard. It's difficult. And I'll tell you candidly, Gary, and someone who advocates for Indianapolis, I still have a hard time going to Fountain Square. The place in which my dad died and went to heaven is in Fountain Square. It's been rehabilitated. It's not the same neighborhood yet. As I kind of peer into Fountain Square and get called for work or pleasure into Fountain Square, it's always on my mind.
Yeah, I'll bet. You were tested again in terms, I would guess, in terms of your faith and outlook on life. Just a few years ago, another turning point for you, 2018, you were diagnosed with testicular cancer. And as I remember you and I talking, that was something that obviously came out of left field. Was that a routine physical, or how'd that happen?
Yeah, so we were in Hawaii, and I had a pain, and a lot of people they brush that away. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to worry about it. And I just had this pain. So we got back from Hawaii, and I went in to see my doctor, and he did an examination, said, I don't feel anything funny, candidly. And I felt God poke me in the back. And I said, could I have an ultrasound? He said, yeah. Dr. Scott Pike, another great human who's helped me in my cancer journey. He said, yeah, let's do an ultrasound. And he called a couple of days later and said, we found a sizable tumor. I'm sorry. And you're going to go into surgery in 3 days. And it's most likely testicular cancer. And, do you have family history? And I said, well, my mom is a breast cancer survivor. Her mom died of the disease. And my great grandfather had testicular cancer, and it took his life, coincidentally. So I went under surgery and came out, was positive. And it gives you a perspective that is, anyone who's been diagnosed with cancer, it's immediately perspective, what's important, what's not. And through that, I was put in touch with Judge Sarah Evans Barker and Jim Morris, learned of this, and both picked up the phone They called Dr. Larry Einhorn and said, "Will you see him?" He said, "Absolutely." And I have been treated by Dr. Einhorn ever since. So my 5 years will be when I can consider myself cancer-free. So I'm looking forward to that. And I'm just so blessed that God poked me in the back in that room and said, "Let's get an ultrasound." And I'm so blessed that I have a mentors and friends that open doors. And I'm so blessed that we have a leading oncologist, Dr. Larry Einhorn, where people from all over the world come to study with him and learn from him and get treated by him.
Yeah.
That's a blessing.
Yeah, very much so. Chris, as you look ahead, lots going on in Indianapolis. How about for Chris Gall? I mean, any thoughts, bucket list ideas or things professionally you'd like to accomplish going forward?
You know, it's my 16th year here at Visit Indy, and the city has grown exponentially. We've expanded and will expand now for second and third time. We've added, our brand has risen. We're an ascending city. We're a city that people are talking about, you know, Orlando, Indy, or Atlanta. You know, where are we going to host our next major convention or meeting? Personally and professionally, I'm fixated on retaining the combine. You know, the NFL for the first time is putting this out to bid. And just this week, Gary, actually, we're putting in our response back to the NFL. This is why Indy is the best place. Why, after 34 years, would you even try to move this around? So I'm very passionate about that. I'm very passionate about how the Indiana State House continues to view the capital city as an economic engine. You know, candidly, there's some fear and loathing on what Indianapolis gets financially and how bills are formed and shaped in and around the capital city. And so, you know, part of my passion is to make sure that each and every one of those elected officials at the State House understands the critical nature of the capital city and how it helps the entire state drive economics and tourism. And I'm all about culture. We have a team now of 52. We lost a bunch through the pandemic because of the crisis. We don't expect hiring them back. And I'm really digging into culture and equity through every lens and every day of what we do here within the walls of Visit Indy and how we present the city to those outside of the city through the lens of equity. And I'm very passionate about that.
Well, I know you'll be very successful in that and all of your endeavors, and that means good things, Chris, for Indianapolis and for the state of Indiana. Really appreciate you taking the time to be on the podcast this week and truly appreciate your friendship as well and all you do for Indy and for the state of Indiana. Thanks very much, Chris.
Well, thank you, Gary. It's a point of personal pride to be on with you, and I love listening, and so I just appreciate the opportunity. I appreciate you having me on.
All right, my friend. Thank you. And thank you for joining us on this edition of the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. It's a weekly conversation with achievers in business, sports, entertainment, and beyond. And you can catch all of our episodes and get Indiana Business News 24/7 at InsideIndianaBusiness.com. I'm Gary Dick. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.